You're listening to the Adam Carriker Show on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Adam Carriker Show here on 93.7 The Ticket. All right, you mentioned there might be some more dream job texts to get to. You got any over there, Jake, by chance?
Yeah, we do. So we've got Ben who says rescuing human trafficking victims. So that'd be a good job. Claytonia John says he wants to be the next Hugh Hefner. So he's kind of thinking a different route there.
That's putting it mildly. Go on.
And Barney says, as you start talking, Adam, I realize one of my other dream jobs is to be a full-time wrestling coach.
All right. I like that. That's a good one right there.
And we've got someone else, 7826, says, I think I would love to be a sports analyst and call the Olympics would be their dream.
Ooh, that would be fun. A lot of good ones. And a nice little eclectic mix right there. I like that, too. I like the eclectic mix. All right, ladies and gentlemen, Jordy Ball is a top 25 finalist for USA Collegiate Softball Player of the Year. Ava Kuzak is in the national conversation as far as, best shortstop in America, according to D1 Softball Ratings. She's the number 4 shortstop in America. Softball Rankings in America has her rated as the 5th best shortstop right now. You know, my wife and I have been trying to figure out, we knew this spring was going to be insane. We just did. And so we're like trying to figure out this week's schedule and that week's schedule for our kids. And I'm like, Ange, do you realize Jordan's playing 3 sports right now? Do you realize both the twins are both playing 3 sports right now? That's 9 sports teams. The older 3, 2, 2, and 1, 5 sport, 14 different sports teams that we have going on right now. So we are used to being busy. A lot of people have busy lives. They have things going on. I don't think we've ever had 14 different sports teams that we are juggling at one time ever. This is a first for the Carriker family. It's fun. It's entertaining. It's exhausting. It's exhilarating. It's exhausting. But it is a lot of fun for the kids. All right. I'm coaching. I'm helping coach in basketball. Angie's doing, I think, 2 different soccer teams right now as well. So we are definitely not bored. All right. Lots to talk about here. Lakers get eliminated in 5, Jake.
That's right.
What are your thoughts here? I told you eventually we were going to talk NBA, ladies and gentlemen. I wasn't lying to you.
Well, the downfall of the Lakers is certainly a good time to jump in. Again, I'm a Celtics fan, so I particularly enjoy these types of
things. So you're not biased at all.
Yeah, no. So
I didn't even make that connection.
I had fun relishing in their loss last night. And it's just interesting. I mean, they've still got, they obviously made the big Luka trade. Everybody kind of jumped on their bandwagon, then thought that they might be able to win there, but were never able to get a center. So there was a hole on the roster. Remember the Mark Williams trade that they tried to get to go through. He didn't pass a physical, so it didn't end up getting there. And, you know, Minnesota, young team, Ant Edwards, some younger pieces, I should say. Some older pieces, Mike Conley still hanging around there. They were just able to win this series rather easily. And it makes you kind of turn on what's next. I mean, LeBron does have a player option. A lot of people would assume that he would come back to the Lakers, not just because of the money, but as well as Bronny being on the team. Luka actually has the decision to make with his that part of the trade as well. So, it's interesting to see where they go from here. But it also is worth noting, LeBron, is he hurting his all-time argument at this point or helping it? Because he's put up great numbers at year 40. But in his last 3 playoff series now, 2-12. That's rough.
I didn't even know that. Goodness gracious. So this is what was sent to me. Just going back to your favorite team, the Lakers as a whole. Who do you think deserves the most blame for the Lakers getting eliminated from the playoffs in 5 games against the Minnesota Timberwolves? LeBron, Luka, Austin Reeves, J.J. Redick, the coach. They don't have a big man. And why do you believe that? One person responded, no one. The roster was incomplete from the Doncic trade. Easy for me to say. This was well known and people decided to ignore it. Minnesota's roster is complete. Their team was better and their coaching was great. The better team won. It's kind of one of those things. You look at the Lakers and you're like, they got Luka Doncic. They got LeBron James. Ooh, this is a team to watch out for. You look at and JJ Redick, great basketball mind, great basketball player, young when it comes to coaching. So he's going to run into other coaches maybe that are ahead of him in their coaching learning curve right now. Minnesota was more well-rounded. They were a better team. Better team. If you did skills, especially offensive shooting competitions, I mean, the Lakers, if you did like the top three players off of each team, the Lakers are going to have the advantage because two of those three players are LeBron James, Luka Doncic. When you go to 5-on-5 in a normal basketball game, in a series, it wasn't even close. Lakers get ousted in five games, and I didn't bring this up because I want to take a shot at LeBron. I want to take a shot at the Lakers. It's like, yep, it's about time to start looking into the NBA, chatting about it a little bit more. But you look at the Lakers as a whole, they just didn't have as good a team. Not as well-rounded, more holes, more gaps they needed to fill. They still have to fill that they just haven't been able to fill at this point. And hopefully they're going to try to do it in the offseason. It is interesting to see what LeBron does. Yeah, what if LeBron's like, hey, thanks for drafting Bronny. I'm out now. Well, what if he just did that? As far as a 2-12 record over the playoffs in recent years, there's a longevity piece. It's interesting because people try to use the longevity sometimes of LeBron's career against him in an argument versus Jordan. Well, Jordan did this. LeBron did this, but Jordan didn't have as many years that he played. Well, wouldn't that be a compliment to LeBron? I would feel like that'd be a compliment. Okay, so sometimes, depending on how you want to look at it, is it average points per game? Is it total points over the course of a career? Just looking at points as an example and things of that nature. I think when you go 2-12, as great as LeBron has been, I do think at this point he's starting to hurt his legacy just a smidge. All right, and NBA viewership continues to decline. What do you think is basketball's biggest problem, and how can they fix it when it comes to viewership there, Jake? And then we're going to dive into Husker Talk right after this.
Boy, that's a loaded question because there's a lot to kind of break down there. I know a lot of people don't like the just the style of play at this point because it's not as focused on hyper-athleticism. And toughness and you know, it kind of turned into a little bit of flopping here and there and mostly chucking up threes. So I think that part of it definitely needs a little bit of adjustment, but let's not lie about it. I mean, obviously your stars need to be your stars. I mean, it's the same type of thing. LeBron James is struggling here. They need to pivot toward who's the next star and not just kind of say, okay, well, this is the guy. I mean, you've got, it has to tie into TV ratings. I mean, it has to happen. So they need to find the next guy or have LeBron James start winning in the playoffs if you want to draw a little bit more eyeballs.
I think that's a very fair point as well. I mean, it's no different. Like look at pro wrestling. It's star-driven. If you don't have stars in pro wrestling, like, people aren't going to tune in. When Hogan went away, what was that, late 80s, early 90s, when he went away, they brought him back for WrestleMania 9 because they weren't selling tickets. They literally brought him back. A lot of rumor and innuendo. He may have used his leverage to get the belt at the end of that, beat Yokozuna, all that good stuff. Okay, story for another day. But it's star-driven, so that's a fair point. For me, I think, and we'll dive more into this throughout the summer, so I'll keep this short. I started to become disinterested when they started stacking teams, the Miami Heat thing. I was like, I want competition. I don't want this. And then I would watch guys play each other in the playoffs and eliminate one another. And I didn't see a whole lot of competitive fire between the two. It doesn't have to be animosity or negativity, but it was like, oh, I just lost to my friend. It's okay. Well, that's not fun to watch. I don't respect that lack of competitiveness. Okay, at least in the situations that I saw. I'm not saying it's every single player. What I'm saying, for me, the intensity isn't the same. You can mask it under the term of load management. You can mask it however you want. The intensity on defense isn't the same. The intensity and the competitive nature of the game isn't the same. The intensity of, I don't just want to join you so we can just dominate Earth and make it a cakewalk like a lopsided youth sports tournament. I want to beat you because I want to compete against you. I may love you. You may be the godfather to my children, but right now I'm trying to whip your rear end sideways on the 60 minutes on this or 48 minutes on this basketball court. I don't see, for me, it's a lack of the same intensity that I used to see. You talk about flopping. You talk about those things. The game isn't as physical as it used to be. I'm a physical guy. Okay, anybody who knows me knows that. So that's not going to be as exciting to me. I miss guys going to the hoop and dunking in people's faces, which you see, but not as much of. I mean, when Shaq, what did he break? Shatter two backboards early in his career? I became a Shaq fan immediately. Like, I like intensity. However that looks, it can be hitting in football. It can be competition in basketball. They're in baseball, whatever the case may be. The pitch clock, I think, helped baseball. I've actually found myself watching baseball a little bit more because the game moves a little bit faster. It makes it a little bit more speedy, the flow of the game, but more intense for me, a little bit more action-packed. You can gaze, put it under whatever guise you want. They're shooting too many threes. Guys are making millions and they're playing lazy. They don't want to compete with each other. I lump it into one word of intensity, or the lack thereof, is not the same as what I liked watching as a kid. So to me, it needs to be more intensity. Dare I say veracity to a degree. And I would probably be a little bit more interested. Now, to be clear, I still watch, especially come playoff time. So we will be talking about the NBA playoffs as these things go along. Okay, now let's dive into just a little bit of Husker talk here. All right, Grant Sigrin has received offers. All right, the walk-on offensive tackle that Matt Rhule actually talked about in the press conference that was standing out during spring, said, hey, if we could get him to believe, hey, you're more, I say this with love and respect, but more than a walk-on, like you're a guy who can play and contribute here. If we can get him to believe that, the guy's a player for us. Okay. Sigrin entered the portal. Wish him nothing but the best. He's received offers from Washington State, Kentucky, Rutgers so far. Okay. We did not get Chamar Brown, Marty Brown yesterday. Quick thoughts on that. We only have limited information on that. We're not going to speculate a lot, but what's your quick reaction on that one there, Jake?
Well, you know, it's one of those things where once it doesn't go your way, you kind of look the other way and kind of start to think about what you do have on the roster and all that. But it is still intriguing that Nebraska waited as long as they did to go after a running back, waited till they had, you know, kind of connections to a running back to go after him. So it makes me wonder, are they still going to be looking for a running back in the portal? So that's one thing, you know, that I immediately think of. And then the other one is, you know, and I know a lot of people are very interested. I mean, and it's hard, like you said, without knowing what's going on. But there is maybe a belief here that somebody came in and outbid Nebraska. And so as we kind of go through all these and go through all the numbers and offseason and Big Ten, this and that.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
These are the battles that you got to win. I think Chamar Brown might be lined up for a third string at Miami. Maybe not. Maybe he can fight above and get into the first or second string there. But just seemed like it would have more playing opportunities here and would have been one of the bigger transfer portal additions of the entire offseason in my mind. Again, there's always that disparity that we've kind of had between coaching staff likes what they have, but on paper, we want to see a little bit more. So it was disappointing for me to see the results of this.
My takeaway from this is obviously some folks were hopeful of a hometown discount. I was like, I don't think that's going to factor in here. And here's the converse of this. If Matt Rhule is going to look outside of the state of Nebraska for recruits, the recruits within the state are going to look outside of the University of Nebraska for places to play at. That includes guys in the portal. Not indicting what Matt Rhule's doing. He's looking around the country and saying, we're going after the top players in the country. And that's clearly been a shift in focus for him. I'm just saying that's how high school players in the state and guys who are high school players from Nebraska that are now in the portal after they've been in college, that's how they're going to respond and see that in response to what's happening. So I don't think there was a hometown discount really a big factor here. It doesn't appear as though playtime was a gigantic factor. He probably went to the place with the most loaded running back room of the three schools, Miami, Cal, Nebraska. It was interesting. It went from Cal, like, was completely out of the picture, 50-50 Miami, Nebraska. Then it was like Nebraska's favorite. Then it was like Cal was like 90% favorite, and then he ends up in Miami. It was such a crazy ride back and forth. It doesn't seem like it was about coming home or not. It doesn't seem like it was about playtime or not. I don't know what else that leaves, except it was probably NIL related. So it's a business decision in his part. As far as Nebraska, man, would have been a great addition. I'm just curious how they feel about that running back room, because they clearly really wanted him. So what does that mean? Is that just because he was so good? How do you not try to add him? Do they feel there's an addition that they need to make at some point, the running back room? Which one of those two is it? We'll see if they try to go after another running back. That might give us our answer. I thought this was interesting. Former Husker Jalen Lloyd on X quote tweeted, all right, Chamar, the announcement of him going to Miami, said, great decision. The comment section got interesting after that. You know, I believe they were high school, weren't they high school teammates or something like that? Okay. So for me, it's always interesting when fans get riled up to something like that. I would say keep in mind, okay, recruits, transfer portal players, current Huskers, they see all this. I'm just going to leave it there. They see all this. Just keep that in mind. When I say things, okay, and some of the things got kind of personal. Some of the things were what they were. I never make things personal, and it's always as researched and informed a decision as I can possibly try to make it, okay? But just keep in mind that it's seen, and try to never make anything personal. All right, let's see here. You probably saw this. Eric Gilbert is going to play at Savannah State this season. Went from LSU to Georgia to Nebraska to Savannah State, the former Nebraska tight end, at least for a time. Wish him nothing but the best. All right, let's talk about Trey Taylor. This was a kid who came back to Lincoln this past weekend. I saw him on the field, on the sidelines at the Husker games. This is someone who's clearly very interested in the University of Nebraska. He's making his live announcement today, 3:30 Central Time. It's between Illinois, LSU, Nebraska, A&M. Okay, the four-star quarterback, depending on where you look, you know, incredibly highly rated, incredibly highly thought of, touted, very good player. What are your thoughts on this, Jake? As for and there's been all these insiders who have indicated they expect him to come to Nebraska. We'll see what actually happens. What are your thoughts on Trey Taylor, him possibly joining the Nebraska team? How much stock do you put in it? Just the way college football is. People commit, decommit, they commit, and then they sign, and then they transfer sometimes, and some of them actually stay and stick it out. I do know contracts are much, much more prevalent now than they were just a few months ago, which is going to help keep kids where they're at for sure much, much longer. I don't know exactly where the contracts sit right now, because I think there's a holding pattern right now when it comes to the, are we revenue sharing? Are we not? Is there 105? Is there not? We're kind of waiting on the judge here. But what are your thoughts on Trey Taylor? If we get him, how big of a deal is it today? If we don't, I mean, the recruiting battle isn't over. He could still do whatever later on. What are your thoughts on this? How big a deal is this?
I don't know if it's a big deal. I think it's fascinating because of all the situations that are kind of surrounding it. You mentioned earlier Nebraska now kind of recruiting more nationally than locally, which leaves, you know, Omaha Westside quarterback Braylon Warren, the class of 2027, not getting interest from Nebraska. Meanwhile, you know, he's got offers from Oklahoma State, Missouri, Iowa, obviously all the teams.
Met with Ohio State. Yeah. Yep.
So it's interesting in that way. And if you get Trey Taylor, then it's more forgivable, I suppose, if you go about that route. But like you said, what does this mean for class of 2027? What does that mean for, by the way, when you maybe would expect him to start 2028, 2029? I mean, what does college football look like? What does Nebraska look like? Is he committing because he likes Dana Holgorsen? Will Dana Holgorsen be here? You know, all that sort of stuff kind of comes into play. And so it makes it really hard to get too excited about it. But at least you have what you always want, is a quarterback in a class that can peer recruit. So maybe you get going from you know, to the get-go, get a jump started. It would be huge for that class of 2027. But it's just hard to really believe that, you know, a commitment today means that he's going to start in 2028 or 2029. I mentioned it the other day, 11 of the 13 quarterbacks drafted in the NFL draft were transfers. So only two guys stayed the whole time. And that's just what college football is, let alone this guy has only played his sophomore year in high school. So you still have junior year. You still have senior year. We saw Dylan Raiola make a few different decisions. A lot of quarterbacks do. And then that brings you to what I think is intriguing about it. Say he does commit to Nebraska. Then you get into the NIL for high schooler discussion, because in order to keep somebody like that, or down the line, that's what I think, you know, programs will have, kind of have to shift to. And, you know, how much of that of your NIL pot can go to that. And maybe that's more from, obviously, not the institutional pay that's coming up, but more for the funds that are raised in collectives and stuff like that. So all sort of interesting kind of scenarios playing around it. As far as if he commits today, will I be over the moon? I won't be. I'll be, again, intrigued, but I just don't know if that necessarily actually will ever mean anything for Nebraska on the field.
Remember when signing day used to be like almost like a national holiday? That first February,
yeah.
First Wednesday in February.
Huge day in radio, especially sports radio, yeah.
Dude, it was like a national holiday for college football fans. Now the first Wednesday in February means nothing, because it's all been switched. Not all, but like 99% of it has been switched to December. But even then, it's hard with the transfer portal. Like, you could get excited about a kid coming in and be like, all right, this kid's a 3-star, but he can really develop. He can get bigger, faster, stronger. This kid's a 5-star. He can immediately impact us on the field, hopefully, you know, sooner rather than later. All right, this kid's kind of under the radar. I don't think this kid's going to be that good, but he's highly thought. Like, you could follow the journey of each and every person. And I would say 90% of the time, well, not 90% of the time, there was 44 players when I came in, and by the time we were seniors, there was less than half of us were still here, and way less than half the scholarship class. The majority that were left were actually, a lot of them were walk-ons, but at least you felt like maybe you had a 50% shot of following a kid all the way through. I don't know what that percentage would be now. I'm not trying to damper today. Trey seems, he's a really good player. He got 2 years left of high school, left to play. He is highly thought of. And if he commits, it's exciting. But it's a start. It's a great start. You got one of the best quarterbacks in America committed to come to Nebraska. But now you got to keep recruiting the next 2 years. And how much, to your point, how much does the game change? How much does NIL change? How does this work? Does somebody else try to come in over the next two? Yeah, the answer is yes. Multiple somebodies is going to come in and try to change his mind. And then do they make a big, you get all the way to signing day 2 years from now. And do they make a gigantic offer right before Matt Rhule hits the press conference stage for his signing day press conference? I'm not trying to put a damper on it. I actually really like him, Trey Taylor. Like, he is a good quarterback. Seems like a great kid. If he comes here and makes it to the quarterback room, I get very, very excited. He comes here, he stays, he develops. I get very, very excited. Just the way college football is, it's hard to put a whole lot of stock in things until things are done with I don't want to say no escape route, but they're done, and you know, and like, you're ready to basically kick off a game. Does that make sense, what I'm kind of saying here? Like, it's exciting, but it would just be the beginning. If he commits to, who else I said, Illinois. Let's say he commits to Illinois. On the converse, Matt Rhule has 2 years to try to change his mind. So it goes both ways. You know what I mean? Any final thoughts? We do got to go to break, Jake.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's just like, whether he's 2 years out and there's something to be said about making a decision before your junior year, maybe, you know, maybe once to kind of be an outlier and jumpstart and get all that going for his class, whatever school he's going to. But again, things can change. And now I just think when you look at recruiting anybody, high school, JUCO, you know, transfer portal, I'm looking at all these guys as 1 year guys, because they're basically, you know, so when you say it doesn't mean anything until they're on the field, but even when they're on the field, it doesn't mean anything for the next season.
Ah, it's a fair point. There is light at the end of the tunnel, ladies and gentlemen, for college football. I just don't know how long the tunnel is. Random stat of the day. The Bucks have the lightest and heaviest players in the NFL. All right, how much do you think the heaviest guy weighs? You have to know who that guy is. And how much do you think the lightest guy weighs?
Yeah, was that the D-tackle they just got from Florida? Was he like 420 pounds or so?
Higher.
464. Oh my goodness.
He said, oh my goodness.
That's almost a 500-pound man. That's crazy. They make shows about those guys.
Dude, he actually, and I said this before, he moves halfway decent for his size. I tell you what, every play you got to double team that guy. And he still might have the size advantage, even if you're double teaming him. All right. And that's not like mockery, like disrespectful. That's like, if I'm an offensive coordinator looking at the Bucks defense, I'm like, you got to account for that dude. Like, that dude's going to be hard to move in the middle of our run game. All right. Okay. Take a guess at the weight and what school he's from, the lightest guy. Both these guys are on the Bucks, but the lightest guy.
Is he a specialist?
No, it's a school you're going to know.
Okay.
It's in the Big Ten.
He's not even a specialist?
I'll give you a hint. Yeah, he's in the Big Ten.
Trying to think. I'll just guess the way. Let's go with 160.
Not bad. 154.
Okay.
Tez Johnson out of Oregon, the wide receiver.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. I played with a guy in D.C., Brandon Banks. He was from Kansas State. Dude, this dude had no fear. He was so small, but he had no fear. I don't know what his height was, 5'6", 5'7". And I remember they wanted him to get up, if this gives you any idea where he was at, up to 160. That was their goal. I watched him step on the scale one day. He was 144. But he was a really good returner. Really, like, he was dynamic. And I swear to God, I would see tacklers almost bounce off him. He had no fear. He was fast. He was a track guy. He ran hard. He lowered the shoulder. He would almost seek out contact. It was kind of like when somebody's like, all right, I'm a little bit smaller. Boom, I got to go prove myself. He did not get knocked back very often. He was fast. He was actually, for my first 2 years in D.C., he was one of the best returners in the NFL. He ultimately didn't make it his third year because at some point you've got to be able to develop as a receiver. And I remember Mike Shanahan saying, we can't just keep you on here to return kicks anymore. All right, because we had some receivers that were getting older. And so he needed to play more on the field. As a receiver, he couldn't do that. But he was 144, the lightest player I've ever personally seen in the NFL. But I had nothing but respect. He had no fear. All right, ladies and gentlemen, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.